Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 100K Freelancer Club podcast. Today, we're joined by the multi-talented Ian Anderson Gray, a renowned expert in live video and confident public speaking. Ian shares his invaluable insights on overcoming the common fears associated with live broadcasting, the importance of authentic engagement, and practical tips for improving on-camera confidence. You'll learn the significance of preparation, embracing imperfections, and the impact of consistent practice on enhancing your live video presentation. Ian's unique blend of expertise in technology, performance arts, and marketing provides a holistic approach to effectively communicating and connecting in the digital age. This episode is a must-listen for anyone looking to leverage the power of live video to grow their audience and amplify their message. But before we dive into this podcast, please hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening to this podcast. It really does help us out and we can continue to bring you amazing guests and great episodes. Let's jump into the podcast. There we go. And thanks for joining me today, Ian. And as always on this podcast, I just start off nice and basic with an easy question. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I always like to take some time to think about that question because I want to answer honestly. But it's been a productive day today, and that's always good. It makes your Mondays and the rest of the week feel good when you start productively.
Yeah, if you get off to that good start, it just feels so much better. I do feel like what you're saying there, I feel the same. With like sometimes the how are you is sort of a trap question. As in you feel like societally you're only allowed to answer good. You know, like if you go to the supermarket and you buy something and the cashier is like, how are you? And they say anything but good. Sometimes it gets awkward, but yeah.
I like to answer honestly, but the other problem is, which you may kind of encounter today, is I have this tendency to overthink, which is sometimes a good thing and sometimes not so good. So, but like what you get from me is honesty at least. So,
yeah, perfect. Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for here today. So I'm going to dive in and ask you a bunch of questions. And so, you know, me and the audience can get to know you a little better, and hopefully we can get some juicy insights from you. But so you're basically here. So your mission is to help entrepreneurs. You say on your site that level up their impact, authority, and profit. So can you just explain to me and us what it is that you do day to day?
So my sub-brand is called Confident Live, and it's so predominantly helping entrepreneurs with live video. And there are three main barriers I think people have with embracing live video or any kind of live content. And that the first one is the confidence to get in front of the camera. So it's that camera fear. People are like worried about looking like a complete idiot and talking rubbish. And it's that fear factor. And the second one is the gear. So we've got the fear, we've got the gear, we've got the tools, the technical side of things. I think some people are afraid of that. And then the final thing, just because it rhymes, the content marketing sphere. So you've got the fear, the gear, and the sphere. It's really bad. But anyway, I'll try and better next time. And that's all about like what on earth do you say and how do you market yourself? So it's those three main pillars. But because my background, I actually trained as a professional classical singer, and I've got that background in the performance and on stage, but also with tech and marketing. I bring all those three things together, and it's not always live video that I help with. It can sometimes be podcasting, public speaking, but it's basically, if I can put it down to this, it's really we've all got a voice, and we all are communicating a message. And it's really helping entrepreneurs to communicate their message, to communicate themselves in a really authentic way. And I particularly like live video. I love podcasting. And that's what I help people do.
Yeah, I'm glad I got you here today, because basically the whole business model of 100K Freelance Club, it started out as like a live platform model. So what we would do is every week we would run live sessions on a different thing. We'd get a different guest on to teach a different subject around freelancing, whether that was like accountancy or web development or whatever. And I really struggled with that at the start. Was I knew I had something to give. I just didn't have the confidence to give it. And I always ended like dreading that moment, dreading that build up. And it's only after doing it like 25 times, so like 25 hour long sessions, that I don't mind turning like the camera on now. Have you got like, what would you say to like complete beginners looking to make live content? Because live content is also scary as well, as in the fact that like if you mess up, you like people can stutter and like they lose themselves, and you get into this spiral on air that can be quite difficult. But yeah, what would you what's your advice to beginners?
Well, completely. And like I could, so my brand is called Confident Live, but I could have quite easily called it the Reluctance Live Video Guy, because that was me right back at the start. I was kind of forced into this. I was talking about how the technical side of how to go live, and then people asking me, well, like, how do I go live? And I thought, oh, I need to go live myself. And so I've kind of had that journey. So first of all, the first thing, the reason I share that story is if you feel scared, you're not alone. Most of us do. There are some people out there that just love it straight away. They don't care. They just press the button, they go live. But most people aren't. Most people are scared. And it's because, for a number of different reasons, it's partly that we're worried about what people think. That's the main thing. So we're comparing ourselves with others. It could be imposter syndrome. There's all these mindset issues that many of us entrepreneurs struggle with. And I think what we need to do primarily is, first of all, to think about who is the most important person when you're going live. And it's not you. It's your audience. It's them that you're delivering this to. Just before we started recording this, I was sharing with you the story about my background. And I'm talking about my actual video background here. At my old house, it was a really boring white background. And I didn't go live for a whole month because I was worried about my background. I was worried about I was worried about what other people thought, but my audience were out there waiting for me to go live. They were waiting for me to share my content. And so you need to get out of your own head. So there's definitely a mindset side of things. First of all, be kind to yourself. Like if you feel scared, that's okay. Second of all, get out of your own head. Think about who the most important person is. It's not you, it's your audience. And if you have a guest on your show, they are very important. They're more important than you. And then the next thing is to practice. The first, let's be honest about this. I could say the first like 30 episodes were not that great of my show, but I could probably say like the first 100, you know, because I'm always improving. So the first, say, 50, I was still very nervous every time I went live, and it got easier and easier. I made all of the mistakes. I forgot sometimes to switch my microphone on. I stuttered over my words. I made all those mistakes, and over time, I improved. And I realized that actually, when you make those mistakes, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. If you stumble over your words, if you make a complete fool of yourself, it's okay, because your audience actually can relate to that more because you are being human. So that's another thing to think about. And then finally, I'll say it's all about planning. So you need to plan what you're going to say, what you're talking about. Don't just press the go live button without any preparation, because in most cases, that's a recipe for disaster. At least come up with 3 points of what you're going to be sharing, or 3 questions that you're going to ask your guest, and make sure that you know what you're talking about and have some notes in front of you. There's loads more we could talk about, but that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I think the planning is especially important if you don't know how many guests you're going to get live, because there is that one aspect of live streaming where you're sort of relying on the viewers for the content, them asking the questions and you getting back to them, and it's sort of this conversation online between a lot of people. But if you're going live for the first time, like you're just starting your business or you're just starting like an influencer or a live stream career, chances are you're probably not going to have a lot of people. So like how do you deal with, or did you ever deal with, were you ever at that stage where you went live and there was like 3 people watching, no comments? And then how do you deal with that beginner stage?
And it's happened recently, because like I went live to Facebook and Facebook didn't show it to anyone. There was some kind of bug. And so like I was there with my guest. It was like a really amazing guest and an interview. And the number at the top left-hand corner, which shows you how many viewers you've got watching live, was a big fat zero because Facebook was being Facebook. So sometimes, like, the tech decides to not work, and it's... But you see, this is really... This comes down to, why are you going live? What is your main reason for going live? And when I came up with... I came up with a planning document that I had right at the start. And one of the reasons was... to overcome perfectionism. I'm a recovering perfectionist. And so what I've found, although live is scary, the great thing about live is you can schedule it. Say, I'm going to go live next Tuesday. I'm going to schedule that to Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. It pops up on all of those three channels. There's a post. It says, Ian Anderson Gray is going live next Tuesday. And so I'm committed. it's going to happen. And the other thing is that when it was pre-recorded video, I was always editing it to death, stopping, starting. I found this with Instagram videos, Instagram stories. I would like start and stop like three or four times. I think a lot of us still do that today, but do you know what I mean? It's that kind of perfectionism. So with live video, it stops you from that. It helps you embrace who you are. So yeah, there's a few things that you can think about when it comes to live video. And so yeah, the first time you go live, you probably won't have very many, but there's one thing that you can do about that, and that is tell people. I know it's really obvious, but this is one of the really powerful things about scheduling your live shows. So this is something you can do with Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And if you're using a third-party tool, like you could use whatever, StreamYard or Ecamm Live or whatever, they allow you to schedule ahead of time. And so once you've got that, you've got a link for Facebook, LinkedIn, or YouTube, either all three or individually, you can send that to your email list. You can put that on socials. You can send emails out individually to people. You can invite people on Facebook as well. And on LinkedIn as well. So let people know. And this is the great thing about live is this is a piece of exclusive content. So people can actually ask you questions. So let people know about that. However, the fact of the matter is, right when you're starting, you're probably not going to have that many people watching you, even if you do all of those things. And do you know what? That's actually quite good. Because if you think about it, when you first start, you're probably not going to be as good as you are after 100 episodes. So having not that many people watching you at the start when you're, messing up maybe and it's not quite as good is okay. But keep growing it over time. Tweak the times as well. So you might find that doing it 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, you don't get very many viewers. But if you do it at 11 o'clock on a Friday, you get more. So test that out as well. And then if you do what I do, which is focus a lot on repurposing, it's not just a live show. It's also, you can convert that into a podcast. You can convert it into a blog post, video snippets. You can post little bits on TikTok or Instagram or whatever it is. So even if you don't get any viewers, it's okay because you've turned up, you're creating content, and then you can repurpose it into the podcast. There's also the replay viewers as well. So remember, live video does require time from your audience, and they might not be in the position to watch right now. They may be driving. They may be washing the dishes. They may have work to do. You never know. So, don't worry about that because with the live, you can then repurpose it. It becomes a replay video. And so don't just focus on the live element.
Yeah, I mean, I do exactly that because I use live as to what you were talking about before. It's like a deadline for me. Like, you can't skip that deadline. Like, if I'm scheduling a YouTube video to go out on Monday, I can always push it back to Wednesday. It doesn't really matter. But with live, once it's locked in, then you have to go. And it's just sort of like it pushes you over the line. And there's so many tools now as well, especially AI tools that help you repurpose that content. So like you said, if you would do 20-minute live session, you could get multiple different clips for Instagram, X now, TikTok, all those social media platforms just from that one live platform. And I don't know if you've noticed at the moment, but there seems to be a big trend across social media platforms, especially Instagram and TikTok, where it seems to be we're moving away from this time period of content creation where it's heavily edited, heavily planned out, to just people just turning the camera on in front of them. So like some of the biggest influencers we see at the moment, like the Sam guy, the super famous bodybuilder on TikTok, literally all he's done to get 2 million followers is he just puts the camera down and presses record. There's no editing, nothing. He just goes live sometimes and just talks. Do you see that trend continuing forward? Do you see us going more down that route?
I think so. And this is I kind of like find this a little bit depressing as well, because like I love to spend time making, you know, editing and making the video look really professional. But actually, sometimes you can make it too professional. People just want the real, raw, human conversation. And so just picking up your phone, going live, or just recording your thoughts on the video is actually a lot of the time what people want. And I think this is going to become even more what people want with the use of AI. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love AI. I use AI tools a lot in my business. But as we get more AI creating content, I think we're going to be, as human beings, we're going to be seeking more authentic human conversations that are not AI created. So that kind of thing that you're talking about is absolutely what I think we should be doing as well. And I think it goes two ways. So we've got the TikTok and the Instagram and also YouTube Shorts. We've got the short form vertical format content, which I think is really, really, there's no question that is a really popular format. People love that. But on the other end, you've got the really, really long form content. And whatever you think of Joe Rogan, like his podcast is like 3 or 4 hours long. And there's a lot of different long form podcasts that are kind of like 2, 3, 4 hours. And I'm not suggesting you do that, by the way, but the longer form content as well. But again, is not edited. Or if it is, it's very, very, very light editing. So I think that's absolutely what we should be doing. You can start off with live video as the what I call your content repurposing machine or hub, but then you can cut it up into little snippets. Don't over edit it, or you can go the other end and just create really long form content. But as well as that, I think creating dedicated content for the platforms is also useful. Is also really powerful. So yes, you can use tools to cut it up into little segments for TikTok and Instagram, but why not just pick up your phone and record your thoughts for a minute and do that regularly without any editing. That I think is also going to be powerful too. So yeah, I think sometimes we can overuse tools. And I say that as someone who loves tools, but sometimes we can overcomplicate things as well. So yeah, just a mix of different ways.
Yeah. I mean, do you in your professional career, do you go live on all social media platforms at the moment? Or have you just got a few that you're concentrating on?
So it's always been for me, the main three have been Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. I'm less of a fan personally of the short form vertical format, so Instagram and TikTok. But I have, so the way I've done it is I will create what I call my pillar content, which is my main show. So that will go out on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. I'll then take little snippets across all those other networks as well. When it comes to Instagram Live, I've used that sometimes. So for example, after the podcast has gone out, I've then gone onto Instagram Live and answered questions with my audience. So that could be quite a good way of using Instagram Live as well. But Instagram, unless you are using some fancy software, which technically goes against the terms and conditions, you have to do it from your phone. Although I think that might be changing. So yeah, and then the other thing that I've also done is I've had fun with TikTok and Instagram and just done some more kind of funny creative stuff, so because people love that, and using my singing background. I haven't done this for ages, but on Instagram and TikTok, I basically, to advertise my episodes, I would basically come up with a silly song to advertise that. So I would put a little backing track and then do silly dances and sing in front of the camera. It was fun at the time. So yeah, just you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Have some fun with it as well.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. It's just, yeah, don't take it too seriously. And don't take yourself too seriously. Hit that record button. I mean, I love that as well, that you're taking that background in the singing and you're actually like using it in like a new light in the business world. That's amazing. You think that there's a difference between the value of the content on these different platforms? So we're talking... I'll give you an example. So we did a month here where we posted a video, a short form content every single day. I think it was like May or something like that, across Instagram and TikTok and YouTube Shorts and some other platforms. And we generated like, I think it was over 100,000 views across these short form videos in a month. But the conversion rate to basically sign up, subscribe, or, you know, become a free student on our website was very low. Whereas in the same time period, long form content and live content, so the live masterclass that we're doing maybe had a total of 300 people come. The podcast long form content probably had a couple thousand views in that same time period. But still 80% or 90% of the end goal, so the signups to our actual product, came from that long term, that long form content and the live content. So how do you go about balancing these kind of things?
Yeah. I love this question. And I think this is the question we need that needs to be asked more often, because I think we can get overly excited by the likes of TikTok and Instagram with the number of views we get. So the first thing I want to say is, but you need to do your own testing. So like, I can say to you, this works or this doesn't work, but that might be my experience. That might be your experience. You've got to work out what works for you. In my experience, my experience is very similar to you. I find that short form content, it gives you that kind of dopamine hit sometimes. You get, oh my goodness, wow, I got like tens or hundreds of thousands of views. Wow, that's
amazing.
It's the
ego boost,
It's great. And that's kind of what they want. Like, that's what TikTok is all built on. It's like a massive dopamine machine, isn't it? That's what it is. Now, but ultimately, what is it that you're wanting from that? Is it? Yes, okay, you could argue you've got 10,000 views on a TikTok video or whatever. It might be more, 100,000, whatever it is. That sounds awesome. And that is great. That might be great to get your face out there, your name out there. But remember that... people might see you and they may subscribe to you. They may watch you next week, but people are fickle. People are going to forget you very easily. Whereas with longer form content, if people are going to subscribe to your podcast, people don't really subscribe to blogs anymore, but, you know, subscribe to your YouTube channel and they start to watch a lot more, they're more likely to remember you. They're more likely to be invested in you. And they're more likely to sign up to your newsletter. I mean, that's kind of ultimately, well, not ultimately what you want, but newsletters are great, or email subscribers are great, because you're then able to talk a lot more about your business and what you can offer and how you can help. So I'm with you. Personally, I prefer to invest in the longer form content. Having said that, with all of these tools that we're using, I think you can get people noticing you with the TikToks and the Instagram, the short form content. I found that when I was doing those silly TikTok videos, because it was very different to what other people were doing, and there were basically some people thinking, "Who on earth is this idiot singing in front of the camera? Let's find out a little bit more about him." And so, it wasn't directly from those videos, but I was getting them into watching my longer form content. But you may find that you're getting leads directly from Instagram. And, you know, some of my clients, some of my people in my industry have definitely been getting leads from Instagram. A friend of mine is, she's actually got her own shop. She's a marketing director at a company, but she actually has her own clothing shop, and she goes on Instagram, shares all the latest fashion. She sells absolutely loads from Instagram. And I know freelancers, I know coaches and consultants that are. So you just, it really depends on your business, and it depends on, yeah, it just depends on a lot of things. So I will leave it there.
Yeah, no, I have seen that as well, especially with e-commerce stores benefiting from those Instagram lives where they, like, if it's like a fashion store, they're just going over the new look, yeah. And they have, you know, they try on the new clothes and stuff, and that seems to be really popular. I think in the industry that I'm in, it's more where it's like a service-based exchange of information. It's almost like the short-form content is the start of the funnel to then get them onto the long-form content. It's like this double content funnel start to then get them further down. It's almost like it's Instagram shorts onto the podcast, onto the newsletter, onto the free product, then to the paid product. Whereas before, I think it was more people were just trying to push these, like, well, you would just push the one social media platform that you want. You wouldn't be too strategic about sending people to different platforms to consume different lengths of content.
I mean, it has to be a multifaceted approach, doesn't it? You know, so you've got to, obviously, depending on your type of business, if it's just you, you can only you can't do everything. If you have a small team, they can, you know, you could be smart and you can have processes that will help you repurpose your content. But you can't do everything, and you just have to focus on what's the low hanging fruit, what's going to bring in the most leads and the most, you know, conversions to begin with. And for some people, it just might be podcasting. Don't knock blogs. Like, one of the biggest revenue streams for me still today is affiliate. And it's mad. Like, the blog posts that I wrote 6, 7, even 10 years ago that are still bringing in recurring revenue for me. And although things are much more difficult today, there's no question about that. The marketer and friend of mine, Mark Schaefer, came up with the concept content shock quite a few years ago, which was basically where there's just so much content out there that it's a lot more difficult to make, you know, to get the impact than we once had. But it's still possible. It's still possible to do that. So, you know, just find where you feel most comfortable. It might be writing. It might be getting on camera. If live video seems really scary to you and you think, well, that's the last thing I'd want to do, well, I'd just say give it a go, because actually, as we said before, it's a way to create content quickly and easily, especially if you're like me, you're a recovering perfectionist, because it just allows you to create that content. And but you could start with blogs, turn that into a live video, turn that into a podcast. And if you have the time and the resources, then maybe focus on one social network. Your audience may well be on LinkedIn, but if you hate LinkedIn, you've got two choices. You either don't use LinkedIn, or you find a way of using LinkedIn that you enjoy. Find a way of doing it, the posting to LinkedIn that you really enjoy. Because if you post to a network that you don't enjoy, people will notice that, and it won't go well for you.
Yeah, I think that's I'm in that exact situation now, whereas I don't like LinkedIn, but I know my audience is there.
Yeah,
and it's this thing is like, okay, I could just like copy and paste every post from Twitter or Instagram to there, but the audience can feel that, right? They can feel that level of sort of that you don't care enough, because like you were saying before, you kind of need to tailor content to each individual platform, right? So would your recommendation to me in that case just be, don't worry about LinkedIn, focus elsewhere?
The reason I'm laughing here is because I'm in the same boat, because like I want to like LinkedIn. I'd have tried hard, but it's interesting. I've just been working with a business coach. So, I mean, I do a lot of coaching myself, and I decided this year I'm going to invest in coaching for me. And it's been great, because sometimes there's things that you miss. And one thing is that, like, I don't like LinkedIn. And one of the things that I've found is that in my career, the most success that I've had is when I've followed my curiosity and when I've had fun. And I think I've had this kind of limited or mistaken belief that in order for me to be successful, I have to do the strategic way. I have to go to LinkedIn. I have to go on LinkedIn, because that's the strategic approach. But actually, the best approach for me, and I think for a lot of people, is what is where are you curious? Where are you going to be your most creative, and where are you going to have fun? And so for you, I would say you've got two choices. You either just don't bother with LinkedIn, or you use LinkedIn in a way that you actually really enjoy.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because I don't like the... It's more about LinkedIn. It's like, I don't like how people post. It's just basically a load of humble brags.
Yes.
And like the whole atmosphere in that platform, it's just, I just really don't like it.
There's just too much of the same kind of post. But not just on LinkedIn, on all the networks. So just try and find it like a way that works for you, a unique way.
Yeah, that's true. Because I think one of the hardest things for me when it comes to content, live content in platforms, is posting stuff or creating content that people are telling you to create, like advisors, other content creators, that you know would be amazing, but isn't true to yourself. So that sounds a bit like weird. I don't like saying stuff like that. It's kind of weird, but it's kind of... Like, I'm struggling to find the words here, but imagine it like this. As somebody, so basically we had somebody look at our email marketing strategies, and this kind of fits into what I was saying. And they were saying, oh, instead of saying like, okay, like these freelance jobs can generate you, you know, a couple of K a month, just say 25K a month, and that will massively increase your conversion rate. And I was like, yeah, but it can't, you know, like there's people telling you and advising you to do things, and you see a lot of, especially in the industry of like online courses and content around business, you see these massive exaggerations because it gets people in, it makes those sales. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the way I base us at the moment, and especially the name, so it's 100K Freelancer Club. The idea behind that was you sell them what they want with the name, but then we give them what they need, because it's not like the whole freelancing journey isn't just, yeah, I'm going to start, it's going to be super easy, I'm going to make loads of money online like I see everybody on Instagram doing. It's a really difficult process, and you have to push yourself hard to get to a point where you can have that good work-life, you know, balance that everybody wants to go for and make a lot of money. And so as soon as they come in the program, that's the first thing we teach them, like, okay, this is hard work. This you will get in, like you will get out what you put in. And I think, but on, you know, on things like Instagram and YouTube Shorts, there's like everything appears to be exaggerated. And then if you don't exaggerate, it feels like you won't ever catch up to that crowd. So then I find myself like, oh, what's the point in making this video about how this person made £500 in their first 3 weeks freelancing, when that £500 really is nothing, but it's also, this is an 18-year-old student at uni doing nothing else, where his friends are, you know, having to work in Tesco's or whatever.
I love what you're saying, but you see, people are crying out for that level of authenticity. Like I am. If only, you know, if you post that kind of stuff on LinkedIn, I'm following you, because if you are being real, because there's so much of this rubbish that is being posted out, like it's just not real. And talking about the struggles, or talking about like how difficult it is to get to 100K, and you might think, okay, well, I'm going to attract fewer people, but I think you're going to attract the right kind of people who are actually willing to put in the work. And it's the same like with my business. My business is called Confident Life, but I've shared on my show, on my content, the fact that I've really struggled with confidence, and that actually the other things that I've shared is like live video is not for everybody. And I've written some of my most popular blogs are what I call the anti-blog. So my first popular post was back in 2011, was talking about the tool Hootsuite. And instead of talking about how amazing Hootsuite was, I talked about how, well, it was seven reasons not to use Hootsuite. And so if you creating content that maybe kind of focuses on people's either their fears and their struggles, or that you kind of, if you have doubts, if you have concerns about these things, then share that, because I think that's what other people are asking. And then you are seen as this, the kind of the real, the authentic voice out there. But that's always what I've been focused on. because yeah, I think that's the way forwards. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I'm completely in agreement that authenticity is the way forward. It's just that sort of, I think once you gain that following, it's easier to continue along that path. But to stand out in this ultra crowded world where everybody's trying to give advice and trying to grow their community and trying to grow their platform, but with these massively exaggerated claims, it's kind of a difficult landscape to compete in. Moving on from that is, so your background was originally in singing, right? So how do you think that has helped you become the live streamer that you are today? And would you recommend people to do that kind of stuff? Because, or not to do that kind of stuff, but I've always had the theory, if you push yourself to do stuff that scares you, then that's what makes you better. Because for me, singing would absolutely terrify me. But if I went to an open mic night, I think it would actually do worlds of good for my confidence. But combining those two worlds together, would that be something that you recommend people to do to get a little bit of confidence boost?
Yeah, so like you don't have to be good at singing. It's not about that. It's just a way of. So the thing about singing is it's not just your voice. You're using your whole body. It's about your posture. It's about your diction. It's about the resonance in your voice. So actually, a lot of what I teach are vocal exercises, not singing exercises. But that's obviously my background. So I have this thing called the Confident Live warm-up formula, and it's just going through different stages that you can, or different exercises that you can do before you go live or you go on stage. One of them is just checking your posture. So all of us tend to slump, which is not good. So if you stand or
like
sit
what I'm
straight,
doing right now.
Well, exactly. And I was doing it too. We all do it, but sit with your shoulders down, your chest erect. That's really important. And, making sure that you are using the resonance in your voice. And what I mean by that is that you're not, you're not kind of going mumbling like this. And then, of course, the other thing to think about is to what I call vocal interest in your voice, or a pitch interest. And I find that when people first go live or they start a podcast interview, they might be really fired up and excited. They might go, hello, welcome to the show. But by the end of it, they're speaking like this on one. And they sounded like a robot because they're speaking on one level. So it's thinking about going up in your voice and going down and just kind of creating a little bit of interest as well. And then the final thing I talk about is heightened authenticity. And with this, it's really a case of thinking about the medium. So on a podcast or, a show like this, I don't have to put a huge amount of energy into this, but I need to probably put a bit more energy into my voice than I would be if we were just like sitting in a coffee shop having a little chat. I have to put a bit more energy because otherwise people are going to fall asleep. Even if what I'm saying is amazing, they're still going to fall asleep. But if I was giving a keynote at a big event at Wembley Stadium, I would have to put a lot more energy into it. I'd have to speak like this, probably. However, that level, if I spoke like this, that on this podcast, you'd think I'd completely lost my brain. So it would just sound completely over the top. So those kind of exercises, I think, are really important. And you might feel silly doing them before, but I think they're really, really important. You said something about doing stuff that scares you, and I agree with you. If you can do something that will scare you, it will help you. It will help stretch you. But something I've been thinking about recently is, as well as that, we also have to keep in check our nervous system, and we need to, because some people, some of us, maybe have like we've got that thing that scares us, but also that anxiety can sometimes push us off the edge, and so we need to keep that in check as well. So you know yourself, have a team around you who are going to be your cheerleaders, support you, but also tell you the truth as well, and just be aware of your comfort zone. Push yourself out a little bit, but also be aware that don't push yourself too much, because I've pushed myself too much sometimes in the past, and that's not good. You don't want to get burnt out.
Yeah, that's very true. I think I'm guilty of that as well. It's going a step too far. And then I feel like with burnout, you don't feel it in the exact moment. You feel it like a week or two later as well. So, it's quite a confusing time. But I'm also guilty of what you said about, like, when you start a live session or start a YouTube video, you exaggerate your over-the-top, hey, welcome back to another episode. And then I sort of fall flat maybe halfway through. And I think where I need to sort of improve as a podcaster is maintaining sort of a higher energetic level throughout the podcast, because especially when I'm talking to people like yourself who I have genuine interest in, I tend to just sit back and listen, and then when you get going, I'm just like, oh wow, yeah, tell me more, and the voice just gets lower and lower. And I can see it when I'm editing the podcast as well, because the audio starts up here and then as you get through, it tapers off. So is there anything you can do mid-session? I know you mentioned about the warm-up, but what about mid-session?
So I just want to say one thing to that. So sometimes I think the energy that we put in at the beginning, so everyone's different. I've had clients who have really have to raise the level, because when they start it, it's more like, hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm very excited to be here. And it's that level. That's doesn't matter what your personality is. That's just not enough energy. You're going to get people switching off. But if you start off with too much energy, so something that is completely different to your personality, then that's not authentic either. You know, what you don't want is you start off and you say, hi, welcome to the podcast. And then you actually meet your clients in the future and they realize that actually you're quite quiet as an individual. They're going to think, well, like, it just seems a little bit kind of, there's some kind of, what I can't think what the word is, but there's something not quite right there. So this is why I call this heightened authenticity. You have to be authentic, but you will have to raise the energy levels a little bit. And when it comes to this, it's really a case of just having... I'm going to be old school here. So I have a technique that helps people look at the camera. So I'm actually using a teleprompter at the moment. I'm using a monitor, which is reflected onto a teleprompter screen. So I can actually look directly at you and at the camera at the same time. But most people will have a camera which is higher up from their screen. So they'll end up looking up. And it looks a little bit weird if they're looking at the camera or they're looking down at the screen, which is what most people do. So the way I look at that is to get a piece of paper, put four arrows pointing into the middle, put a hole in it, and then just stick that over your camera. So you've got the hole in the middle, and that will focus you on the camera. It sounds really old school, but it really works. And when it comes to answering your question there is just have some notes around you that just remind you to keep the energy going. Or if you're a little bit higher tech, have a little thing that pops up on your computer every 5 minutes that will just pops up and reminds you, keep the energy level going. And I think after say 5 or 6 episodes of that reminder popping up, you probably won't need to have it there, because you'll have, it's that muscle memory. It's reminding yourself over time. So that's what I do. Start off with something fairly low tech and keep reminding yourself about it. And over time, you will get that energy level going. And as you said, another great way is edit your own podcasts. Yes, okay, you can. I'm a big believer in outsourcing. But if you edit your podcasts, you'll soon realize how lacking in energy you are. And that will probably help you remember next time.
Yeah, because if you edit your own podcast, you'd listen to the whole thing as well. So you can pick up, you know, would I probably have lost the audience here? This bit wasn't interesting. I was losing the guest here. So yeah, it's kind of, I would recommend that as well. I mean, I still learn a lot every time I do. I mean, is that, what point then would you say to outsource that? Because I think for me, I probably could outsource it, especially in terms of, like finances and freeing up time for me, I think it would be beneficial, but I still do like to go through it and make sure that what I've said is like true to myself, true to the business. I'm not misrepresenting anything. I don't think a freelancer or somebody that's not really close to me could do that good of a job in going through the podcast.
So the reason for outsourcing this is it frees up so much time. Editing can take a long time. There are tools that can help, and I would use a tool like Descript, because it allows you to, you just bung it in there and it transcribes it, and then you can edit it using basically the words. So that will really help. But I still like Audition, though. Quite like editing on Audition, but that's because I'm a geek. I think it can teach you a lot, because it actually forces you just to let go. And this was the hardest thing for me, because I'm a recovering perfectionist, not a perfectionist. I have to say recovering, because it's an ongoing battle. When it comes to editing my own podcast, there were so many things that I would do. I would maybe kind of fade in this, and I would put a bit of this in, and my podcast editor wouldn't go to the same amount of detail. But ultimately, who was I trying to please? Pleasing my own kind of perfectionism in a way. But like, the audience didn't really care. That, you know, they probably didn't notice the difference. They probably actually would prefer the less edited version when I use the professional podcast editor. So, but then the thing that you do lose, of course, is listening to yourself. If you can, if you've got the resources and the money to be able to outsource, don't do it straight away. Maybe do the first 20 episodes of your podcast yourself, then outsource it.
But talking about objectives and what you were saying earlier about you were editing your podcast a lot, and when you handed that over to the editor, they weren't taking the same level as you. They weren't putting as much attention into the editing. Do you think there's sort of a scale of editing versus return? So obviously maybe the objective of the video is to get views. If you spent 30 minutes editing it versus 3 hours editing, do you think you're actually getting that extra value by spending that more time on it?
You can make the editing process far less involved if you think about this and you do a lot of planning beforehand. So with my live shows, I always structured it in a way that made the editing a lot easier. And the same with podcasting. You know, you can just make it so that you actually don't need to do any edits. I mean, obviously, if your guest says something, I don't know, incorrect or even libelous, then you're going to have to edit that bit out. But in most cases, I got to episode 100. And the reason I actually stopped outsourcing it is because I really pretty much stopped editing. I stopped caring. If I stumbled over my words or I went I just thought, you know what? It doesn't matter. People actually, the only person that really cared about me stumbling over my words and me stammering and going was me. That was the only person. So I stopped caring so much, and when I say editing, I was putting the music at the beginning and the end, which I kind of did in the live, but I just wanted, there was a bit of a gap when I did it live. So I wanted just to get it a little bit more, less silence. That was it. That's all I did. So, and my numbers didn't go down, they went up. So I agree with you. I think that it comes a point where you just think just less editing is more, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But do then on the other side, do you think there's like a tipping point where it's too bad? So let me put that into the context of live streaming. So you can imagine you had to produce content each month to you generate your leads or whatever through it. If you took the time, you could either do two live podcasts, let's just say, and you could afterwards edit them heavily, or do 5 live podcasts in that month. But in that month, you would be a little bit more stretched for time. It's basically quality versus quantity. Like, how thin do you think that line gets? Because at the moment, there's obviously one of the biggest guys in content, Gary Vee. He's always pushing on Instagram and stuff like that. Yeah, just post. Are you on that sort of line, or do you think that can be detrimental at some point? Because I think with a live audience, if you're posting live stuff and it's not great, why would they come to the next one? Like, if they came to a bad one, then why would they go to the next one? But so what's your opinions on that kind of context?
Well, so I, you know, I know Gary Vee does this a lot. He talks about this. And from one point of view, so he's right in that the more you do it, you're getting it over yourself. You're just posting it and you're just getting over it, getting over yourself and getting over that perfectionism. But you, in terms of your audience, you've got to think about your audience. And there is the argument that people aren't going to see all your posts. They might just see like even 1% of it or 10% of it. So the more you post, the better. I personally, for my brand and for me, I just prefer to focus more on the quality. So I, at my peak, I was doing 2 live shows a week. And I was doing that to kind of batch so I would have like a 5 or 6 week lead time for my podcast. So I would batch them in a sense because my podcast was every week. And that worked really well for me. And that enabled me to repurpose to all my different platforms really well. And it also enabled me to create content that I was really happy with, that was good quality. At the end of the day, we have businesses to run. You know, unless your revenue is totally from content, if you get all your money from sponsorship and affiliate or whatever, then fine. But for most of us, we have other work to do. And if we do too much, like I know for me, live creating content, I love it, but it takes a lot out of me. And so for me, I just know that I can only focus on a maximum of 2 live shows a week and 1 podcast a week. And so you just got to think about yourself and think what works for you, your audience. I personally would focus on the quality. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I suppose a good point inside of what you said there is like, are you even able to? So obviously I could do 10 live videos a week, but am I even able to? No. I could post once a day on Instagram every single day, a new reel, but am I able to? No, because I've got the business to run. Like you said there, my business or businesses don't run off of content. It's not like I'm an influencer who is, you know, just getting paid off a sponsorship. There's other stuff to do. So I guess instead of being mad at myself for not producing as much content as like other people are doing or is possible, you have to look at yourself in a realistic light and say, okay, what can I do? Yeah. And with that available time, how should I allocate that time basically?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, don't, you know, this is the problem we have when we compare ourselves to others, you know, like huge respect for Gary Vee. Like he's created like the most like ridiculously successful business. You know, by the way, look at Gary Vee's first videos on YouTube, and that will inspire you because they're really, really bad. And now look at him, you know, he just to see the arc of him like improving over time. But like, remember, Gary Vee, he has a massive team of people. So he just creates his little video on his phone, and then that's going to be zapped off to his team that can then repurpose it like mad. So and Gary Vee is Gary Vee. You know, I've seen him speak at an event. He's just like loads of energy. Not all of us can keep up that level of energy and stay sane. So that's the other thing to think about. And then, you know, just focus on creating content that excites you, that inspires you. If you do it every day, you might not be able to keep that up for that long. So just, yeah, you don't have to copy what everyone else does. Just, but I will say, when it comes to repurposing, you can put into place systems and processes that are really smart, that's going to help you do all these things, that's going to help you repurpose to TikTok and Instagram. And I know you've got a lot of those. You know, you post to all these channels from your podcast. You start with a video, which you can then repurpose into all these different things, and that's a smart way of doing it. You don't have to have a huge team. My team, I have 2 part-time virtual assistants, and they do everything that I need for my shows. So you don't have to spend a huge amount of money. You don't have to have teams of like 4, 5, 6 plus of people to do this well. Just create the systems and focus on what excites you. And also, that's not going to drive yourself into the ground.
Yeah. What systems are you using at the moment, though? So you mentioned there that you've got two personal assistants, but like, what's the system that you're using at the moment that you find to be really effective?
Yeah. So the system that I use. I use Ecamm Live, but in a sense, it doesn't really matter which system you use. You could use like a web based tool like StreamYard, or you could use Riverside FM. What happens with the videos? They're saved into either Google Drive or Dropbox. My assistant has access to those. We've then got a whole system. My assistant uses Asana, but I also use Notion. And so we just go through these different systems. So we send the video out and the audio out to my guest. We use Calendly links. I'm getting it all out of order, by the way, but I'm just saying it all out. And then when it comes to the podcast, my assistant puts it into Descript. So Descript is this editing tool I was talking about that transcribes it. We can then have the full transcription, which we can then upload. I will then do the quick edit in Descript. So I'll put the beginning and the end. Also in Descript, you can create these little video snippets as well with a template. So that will then go out on. So I usually do about three or four different vertical format videos and three or four square videos. And then they get added to the folder on Google Drive, which gets sent out to our guests. And then, of course, it needs to be uploaded to our podcast host. So we use Captivate FM for that. So that just, my virtual assistant puts it up there, puts all the links in, posts it out. And that's just some of it. But there's loads of things you can do there. And all that I need to do is come up with the title. I need to obviously find my guest. If I've got a guest on the show, I will do some of the image editing and a little bit of the podcast editing, and that's it. And obviously, I have to turn up for the show, obviously. But other than that, it's kind of the system's all there, and it just enables me to do so much more, because ultimately, I was spending all this time just doing stuff that, yes, I'm okay at. It's the whole zone, the different zones, isn't it? Like, I was in my zone of competence probably, but not in my zone of genius or excellence. So just dump the stuff that other people could do better than you, and it's going to save you time, and then you can focus on the stuff that you're really good at and excites you.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you're doing the podcast and you're doing the live content, is that something that you really enjoy, just that you would do it for free if you had to?
Yeah, I think the reason I'm kind of slightly thinking about this is I think there have been times when I've just created content for the sake of it, and it's at those points when I needed to stop and I needed to rethink what I was doing. But most of the time, yes, absolutely, I love what I do. I love interviewing people. I'm a very curious person, so just inviting a fantastic guest onto my show, having a really good conversation, that's ultimately what it's all about for me. So yes, I think the answer is yes for that.
Perfect, because that leads me on to a follow-up question. Is a lot of people in businesses, entrepreneurs, freelancers, they can see the benefit of content, creating content, going live, building that audience, connecting with that audience through live videos, but they hate it, or they, let's just say, they don't enjoy it. Would you recommend to them that they continue to do it? Because let's just say, for example, they've done a few live videos, they've got some good results, it's generated the outcome that they wanted, but they don't enjoy it. What's the solution to that?
Well, that's a really interesting one. I think ultimately I would never want to force somebody to do something that they're really uncomfortable with doing. So I have met some people that the idea of going live is just so foreign to them. They would be so nervous each time. It would give them almost like an anxiety attack. And if that's the case, it's probably not the best time for you right now. There are things that we can do to help. But maybe writing is for you. Maybe it's blogging, creating that kind of content. I think you have to create content. You just have to find the format that works for you. I do think video is unique in that it's displaying yourself. You're showing yourself. People can actually get to know you. And I think if you don't have video on your website or any kind of content that's video related, I think that's a shame. I always, if I get an email from somebody, I always tend to check out their website. And if I can't see any photos or any videos, I'm always a little bit thinking, well, who is this person? I want to get to know the person. Whereas with video, and particularly live video, you can not obviously get to know them completely, but you can get a good idea of who they are and their personality. So I think focus on other pieces of content first that you feel more comfortable with. But with video, maybe that's something that you just work on over time, and you might find that you actually end up enjoying it. I'm a case in point here. I didn't like video. I was the reluctant live video guy. And the more I've done of it, I've come to the point now when I really, really enjoy it. I'm coming onto the show having a conversation with you. I know this is an audio podcast, but you're recording the video as well. And we're having a great conversation, a great time. So ultimately, that's what video is. Do you like having conversations with people? I think 99.9% of humans do. So just think of it like that. It's, you know, I think most of us have got come to terms with being on Zoom over the last 3 or 4 years. So let's just don't treat it any more complicatedly as that, I think.
Well, I guess you could look at it then from based on what you're saying, you're not doing it for the audience, you're doing it for yourself. So in the terms of, like I said to you at the start of this podcast, like, I love doing this because I have genuine curiosity in the people that come on. I love learning about other people's lives, about, you know, how they deal in business. I love learning from them. And this is why I think this is a more successful avenue for me as the podcast rather than the short form content, because I don't necessarily like doing the short form content, as in, like, the, if you've seen my Instagram page, I do these like little skits and stuff about business advice, but I'm not a massive fan of doing that, but I much prefer this. Yeah. And I think it boils down to like the question that I just asked you, it kind of came from an infographic that I saw the other day, which was it compared the businesses and their following on social media to the owners. So if you look at like Tesla versus Elon Musk, like Elon Musk has got way more followers than Tesla. If you look at Apple, Tim Cook, like Tim Cook's got way more followers. And it feels like nowadays the personality of the founder and the important people inside the business plays a massive impact on the business. So it's almost a requirement of entrepreneurship nowadays to be good at social media, to be an active, almost influencer. I mean, how do you feel about that statement?
Yes, it's true. It's true. Like, we treat brands anyway like human beings anyway. You know, it's kind of, I mean, Apple, you could almost give, like, what would be, if you were to describe Apple or Google, like, you could almost probably describe them as a person. But we tend to focus on, like, Tesla is kind of Elon Musk, isn't it, as you said. And so I think it's focusing, you've got to just embrace who you are. And you say you're not a massive fan of creating short-form content. That's okay. I'm exactly the same. And I kind of struggle with this because I feel there's so much pressure to create short form content. I almost feel that it's like my dirty little secret that I don't particularly like short form content. I don't particularly like watching it, and I don't particularly like creating it. So focus on the kind of content that excites you. And for me and for you, I think it's longer form content when we can get deeper. We can have these really in-depth conversations. That's not to say that you can't or you should avoid short form content. You can repurpose it and you can create a little bit of that. But it is about, it's kind of like thinking about it two ways. There's, first of all, it's thinking about your energy levels. Like, I would probably describe myself as an introvert. I love being around people. I need to be around people. But if I'm around people too much, I kind of, like, my energy is sapped. And it's kind of the same with content, creating content. I probably need to create short form content, But if I create too much of it, I'm going to be sapped of my energy as well. And so think about what you want to basically focus on your audience. You want to create content that they like, that highlights you, highlights your business, highlights your personality. But you've got to do it in a way that is that you feel happy with, that's going to excite you, and also that your audience are going to kind of know that you enjoy as well.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to opportunity cost as well. The opportunity cost of the investment that you put in versus what you get out,
yes,
but versus also versus say. Like anxiety and enjoyment. So you need to weigh a lot of things up to come to formulate the answer to that question, basically. But yeah, I mean, I can see the time ticking in. It's been over an hour already. This is fantastic. And I just wanted to ask you, like, if people want to check you out, check out your programs, where's the best place that they can find you?
Well, I have carelessly scattered myself across all the socials. So you can find me on most of the social networks out there. Just search for my name, Ian Anderson Gray. And if you see a profile pic with a mad person on a red background with the mouth wide open, that's probably me. But my website is where it's all at. That's iag.me. I've got a podcast on there, The Confident Live Marketing Show. I've got courses. The one that's probably most helpful is the toolkit. It's the Confident Live toolkit at iag.me/courses. And that's at its heart is a course that helps you to be confident with the tech and the gear. And talks about the processes, but it's also I have a lot of all the resources that we talked about on this show today. I basically have all of that in that. So you've got all the, for example, you've got a plan and processes and lots of stuff in there. So you can check that out as well. And then the other thing is my video gear. So my studio. So if you go to iag.me/gear guide, that's basically all the tools and all the gear that I use, and that's freely accessible. You can just check out if you want some ideas on podcasting and live video gear, you can check that out.
Perfect. Yeah, I think I'm going to definitely check that out as well and see how I think your setup would probably be a bit better than mine. I need to take some lessons from you. I like I said at the start of this podcast, I'm loving the background, and I think that is something that I need to work on too. But thank you so much for coming on today and sharing like all of that information with us. Thanks for the great conversation, and hopefully we can get you on sometime in the future as well, and you can see how your tips have rolled off on me in that future episode as well.
Oh, I'd love that. That's great. Well, it's been great to chat with you. Thank you so much. It's been a really in-depth conversation today, which is what I love. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. And to everybody listening, remember to hit the subscribe button. And if you have any questions for either of us, you can hit us up on the socials at 100K Freelancer Club. And we'll see you in the next episode.